Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
This is Graham McTavish, and you are listening to Ginger and Summer on the Outlander podcast.
Welcome to episode 108 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
And now on to our read-along. This week we are discussing chapter 22 from Dragonfly and Amber, entitled The Royal Stud.
Because Summer couldn't remember the name of the book.
She had to look at the book in her hand. She's like,
You know, okay, I'm going to tell you what I heard in my head. In my head, I thought Diagon Alley, which is a totally different book. So I had to look at the
That's
cover.
Not even a book. It's a place that's in another
book.
No,
but it has the D and the A in it, like the two words. Oh, so I was like, I have to go back and make sure that it was not Diagon Alley and it was Dragonfly and Amber. Dragonfly and Amber.
Okay, now that we've agreed on that.
Chapter 22, The Royal Stud.
So chapter 22 is the first chapter of part 4 of Dragonfly and Amber called Scandale. That's it. Scandale. I stopped as if there was more of it.
What are you talking about?
It's part four.
Part four.
Oh, that's... Oh, I was like, I saw Scandal.
Me too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mais c'est français.
Yes. Okay. Linnae. No parlez-vous. No.
How about Scandale?
Scandale.
If I was in the South, I'd say Scandale.
We're not, and so you won't.
Okay, fine.
So this chapter opens with Jamie, Claire, and Wee Fadigas riding along in a coach on a very bumpy road. Connie writes, "Yea, verily, potholes will always be with ye, even to the end of the age." So, and then regarding the way Diana describes Fergus's head lolling like a doll's, his head rocks and sways like the head of a mechanical doll with a spring for a neck. She writes, "I can just see it now. Wait for it. Bobblehead Fergus dolls. Get yours at the Outlander official online store." And I'm like, that's actually, they already have the Funko Pop.
Do they
not
really?
Not too much further.
They do, yeah.
Not the store, but the Funko Pop dolls exist. Connie also points out that the ride from Paris to Argentan, or even Versailles to Argentan, is not a short ride for someone in her condition.
How long would it take to get there?
Well, Connie did the research, and she tells us that the distance to the Royal Stud at Argentan from Paris is about 174 kilometers. That's about 115 miles in a coach.
Wait, and that's not a day trip, though, in a coach, in a carriage.
That can't be. I mean, that has to be several
days.
So
they must, because they kind of talk about it like it was just a day picnic, like they decided to go to the...
Well, she also says the distance between Argentan and Versailles is 158 kilometers, so about 104 miles. And she said that's going straight as the crow flies. So it's a pretty long journey in a coach for a woman as far along. And I guess as pregnant
that's
at
a
all.
Long journey for people
anybody.
In
for
general.
Coaches don't go that fast.
No,
I mean, you
don't.
Think about horses traveling. Most coaches don't barrel along at a canter the entire time. They're usually like trotting. Mm. You know, trotting
like
is the
five
main.
Miles an hour?
No, it's more than 5 miles an hour. It's probably 10 miles an hour, maybe 8 or 10. But that's not that fast.
Did we mention Linnae's here with us?
Oh my goodness. Okay, this is really. But welcome, Linnae. And because I think it will become obvious the further along we get. But
why
it should have been obvious with the title of the chapter, The Royal Stud. She's here to talk horsey with us. So Connie also points out that this is the first mention of the running stag brooch in the books, other than when Frank describes it from the ghost.
It was mentioned in the book that Jenny had forwarded it, had mailed it to them.
Jamie and Claire are sitting together on one bench while Fergus sleeps on the bench across from them in the coach. They are on their way to the royal stables at Argentan. Claire is having trouble getting comfortable due to her ever-changing form and her active child in the womb. So I can't speak of this since I've not been pregnant. Can you two commiserate with Claire and her difficulty in getting comfortable?
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
At any stage.
How far along is she at this point? She's 5 months?
About 5 months.
Is what they say?
Yeah.
At 5 months, you know, it's especially with your first baby, you don't start to show as quickly. With your second kid, it's like your body remembers and you just poke out immediately and you start to get in your own way much faster. Whereas 5 months pregnant, you're still not really, at least for some, most women, depends on the woman, everybody's different. But for me, I wasn't really, my belly was kind of bigger and looked more distended, but it wasn't like obviously pregnant.
No, I was not obviously pregnant, but she was head down from about month five on, so I had pressure on my pubic bone from about month five on, so I was pretty uncomfortable sitting.
Well, and Claire talks about getting swelling on her legs and feet, and I was lucky. I never had any swelling like that. I had a friend of mine, she started getting swelling around 5 or 6 months. Her legs and her feet, she had no ankles anymore. Uh-huh. This is my friend Rachel, who's like a beanpole.
She doesn't listen to this, does she?
No.
She's about to be insulted.
No, she doesn't care. She knows. Like, we all got together one time, and, like, she was really pregnant at this point. It was towards the last trimester of her pregnancy. Her face was swollen. Like, her nose was almost, like, twice as wide as it used to be. And she was like, I know. And she sounded so stuffed up. She's like, oh, my gosh, I am swollen all over my body. Everything's swollen. And she's like, and it was just so uncomfortable. She was miserable. She's like, I'm never getting pregnant again.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, just different people have it differently. At 5 months, it wasn't
too bad.
That bad. I mean, the baby's not even big enough, really, at that point. I mean, it can start definitely putting pressure on your bladder and things like that. But the, you know, having to go pee a lot, that's not just the baby getting bigger and pushing on your bladder. That's hormonal as well, can make you do that. So the discomfort, it is harder, though. Your back, your lower back starts to like you got to get more pillows behind you as you sit down and propping your feet up. And I never had swelling on my feet, but they would feel kind of tight and like, you know, when, even though they never really swelled up.
I didn't have that in month five. I did get swollen feet. I was in flip-flops. I lived in flip-flops for like the last trimester,
my feet got a little tight. They didn't get swollen. Like, all my shoes still fit. But when I was at work, I would prop my feet up under the desk on, like, this pillow on these boxes. So, yeah. Oh, and I have to make a comment about, I love the fact that, like, Jamie, like, refuses to wear a wig.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. Because I'm like, I don't know why people ever thought wearing wigs was, like, a fun, fashionable thing. They are hot and itchy and not fun to wear at all.
It's a societal cultural thing, and it's a cultural thing. Yeah. People still do it now, and a lot of times it's because it's so much easier to do hair when you're looking at it. And you can do 360 degrees of hair
and then stick it on
fashioning before it's even on you, because once it's on you, you can't see behind you. So it's like a lot of women do their hair on the wig and then just wear the wig, and they don't have to worry about their hair. So I can imagine that it's a much quicker fix in the morning getting ready. You just get up, throw the wig cap on your head and put the wig on. And in the wintertime, it actually might help you keep warm.
No, in the winter it's different.
But in the summer...
I had a friend of mine who lost all her hair during cancer, and she decided to wear wigs. And it was, I could tell. She was constantly like kind of looked sweaty and itchy. Like, and if she got to working and running around at all, she'd like start just dripping. I'm just like, I'd wear a headscarf if I had no hair. I'd wear like a fancy headscarf if I had no hair.
You wear fancy headscarves now.
That's true, I do.
So we find out that the Duke of Sandringham will also be there at Argentan. Indeed, the occasion is for him to purchase 4 Percheron broodmares for his own herd in England.
Are you just going to say Argentan as many times as you can?
Yes.
It's whatever I have typed here. Jamie was invited along to give his advice to the place, to give his advice on which horses to choose, maybe to help him choose them. Connie comments, she looks forward to hearing Lene talk about the Percherons. Can you describe them a little? What do they look like, and what are they used for?
Just the Percherons at Argentan, not the Percherons in general.
There's different, I did read up a bit, because I don't know a lot about draft horses, because most of the horses I ride are thoroughbreds or warmbloods, and a few other random horses. The only draft type of breed I've ever ridden is Frisian. And they are considered a draft breed, like the Gypsy Vaniers and those, but they're like a riding breed. But Percherons, I think, as far as I know, they were bred as like a riding horse that also could be used as a crossover horse for pulling things or draft or ag and all kinds of stuff. And as they would, I know Arabs were in there somewhere for the riding. They would bring in Arabs to kind of make them a little more refined looking for a riding horse. And then, and of course, as they brought them over to the United States and started using them for agriculture. I mean, Percherons were like the horse that, I didn't know this, but they were like 70% of the draft horses in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Were Percherons.
Well, I until was reading the description.
Until recently?
This is, they had, of course, you know, draft horses now that, agriculture has been, you know, got machines to harvest everything. So what I found out, their exact origins are unknown.
Okay.
They're an agile draft breed. They're not the largest draft breed. Mm-hmm. Belgians are generally bigger. They're mostly gray or black. They're smaller in the 17th century in this time frame than they are nowadays, because nowadays they're bred generally more towards the draft breed, mm-hmm. like the pulling and you know, a working horse
type.
So they breed them bigger and more muscular for that kind of thing. So I think, because Diana describes them in the book, and she says they were over 5 feet tall at
big
the, in the back.
Fat asses.
Actually, 5 feet tall is not that tall for a horse. 5 feet is only 15 hands. 15 hands is not a large horse. That's like a quarter horses or average 15 hands. It's the thoroughbreds and warmbloods that get up over, I mean, some of the other quarter horses and things like that get bigger, but 16 hands. And a, okay, talking about hands, a hand is 4 inches. The way they used to measure, I think, originally where the hands came in, is they would go up the front foreleg and they'd go hand over hand. And so that they, that's how they would measure the horse. And they go all the way up to the withers.
Okay.
And the withers are where the neck, the end of the neck, meet the top of the back. It's where the shoulders meet, right underneath. So that's where you measure to. It's not the back of the horse or even the top of the horse's head.
Mm-hmm.
It's the withers. That's how tall they are. So you go up from the front leg up to the withers, and that's how tall they are. So 16 hands. So 5 feet is 15 hands, and every hand is 4 inches after that. So it's not really that tall. 15 hands isn't that tall.
It's not tall, but when she describes it as having a wide ass, I'm imagining the difference between the
draft breeds is they don't necessarily have to be that tall. Like the Frisian I rode, Frisians aren't necessarily that tall either. They're a smaller draft breed like this, but they're so thicker, they have such thicker bone structure and way larger muscling, big, huge, rounded muscles. So they have this big, like, apple butt. Like seriously, their butts, if you look at them from the back, they almost, from their spine, round up and out and over.
Mm-hmm.
And their hips go out. I mean, they really are round, and they have these big, huge ribcage barrels. They really are big around. So, yeah, it's just a much larger horse and broader in the chest. It's a larger horse.
What color are they?
These ones are generally gray or black. Okay. But I think it depends on where you are. Like, the breed registry in France is different than a breed registry here.
And then probably they were different in the 18th century.
Yes.
They were slightly
smaller in the 17th century than they are nowadays.
But I hear that, and that sounds like it would not be a comfortable horse to ride. At all. Like, it,
no.
Because of the width
they
of it.
They are really large.
Because, I mean, you have to imagine sitting a horse like that.
Oh, so it would, like,
would
spread
be like,
your...
Yeah.
And spread the, yeah. your goodies a little
like
bit further.
But much better for pulling a plow or...
Yeah. But one of the reasons that Percherons were also so popular for working horses, because they were a draft breed, but they didn't have the feathered feet like a lot of the other draft breed horses do. And so when mud and stuff would get on their feet, it was easier to clean them up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the, it wouldn't get caught up in their feathers and burrs and all kinds of stuff. So it was a lot easier to clean them.
So my feathers, for people who don't know, it's like the really
like
fuzzy,
you look at the Clydesdales and the
little,
huge...
Yeah.
Hair, that, beautiful
clothes.
Hair that comes off.
Yeah.
Those are, they call them feathered. So, and like the Frisians are feathered. Frisians are feathered. They have
Clydesdales
okay. and Frisians and gypsy veneer. I think they're called gypsy horses.
I'm gonna have to go look.
They're like
up.
They're really pretty. They're like a black, generally black and white spotted or like dark brown and spotted paint looking, but they're draft and they're
nice.
Feathered and they have these huge long manes that go like are 2-3 feet long and they're huge big tails. They're really, really pretty.
If I don't shave my ankles, I get pretty feathered.
I don't think you could compete with these draft horses. But yeah, and also between 1789 and the 1800s, they almost became extinct as a breed because breeding was suppressed during the French Revolution.
Oh, so... At the time that we're, I know it's fiction, but at the time we're talking about this tale.
This is before.
This is before, this is the 40s. Yeah. So,
so it's 50, about 40 60, years 70, before.
80, 90, about 40, 50 years almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
91, yeah.
So, yeah, and they were also bred for war horses because they were, like I said, they were agile for a draft breed. Like, they call them hot blood horses, cold blooded, and warm blood. And it's just really their temperament. They're not, there's no difference in actual blood. but the cold, they tend to be slower and slower to react and slower to respond, the colder blooded horses. But these ones in particular, I guess, I've never ridden a Percheron, but they're supposed to be much more agile and fairly docile and good temperament. And so they were used a lot for war, which during World War I, they were used a lot. In fact, a lot of the Percherons that were here, because we used them so extensively and bred them so much in the U.S., that we ended up shipping a ton of them back to Europe for the war.
Oh, wow. So our soldiers were using them as well as shipping them over to be used by
allies. Yeah, they were using them as not only riding horses in the war, but they were using them to pull artillery and everything else. So, anyway.
Because this is before tanks. So this is, or just at the, at the outset of the beginning of tanks. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so they go anywhere between like 15 hands to like 18 hands, depending on kind of the lineage of the horse. And they're about, but they're so heavy, they're like 1,100 to 2,500 pounds.
Good grief.
And the horse I ride, he's a tall thoroughbred, but he's only about 11 to 1,200 pounds. Huh. So these horses are like
stocky.
2,000 pounds. That's a big animal.
That's a cow.
Yeah, they're really, really cow-like. Large.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, and they have used them, and the French did also use them for meat as well.
I wonder if they use them currently.
As far as I know, they've gotten kind of away from that, but the bigger draft breeds, of course, again, because they have large muscles,
that makes sense.
They're better for eating.
That makes sense.
So they use them for ag, for riding, for eating, for all kinds of stuff. They were very useful.
So as they go on, they are discussing what Louis helping out Sandringham, or the English, might mean, as far as Louis not wanting to, at least openly, support or show sympathy to Charles Stuart goes. So Jamie relays that Mr. Duvernay said that the council is entirely against this, the support of the English, or the support of Charles. The most that may happen, he thinks, is that Louis may eventually give Charles a small allowance, but nothing more. Through his contact with most of the bankers in Paris, Jamie has learned that no one is seemingly interested in backing, quote, a dicey proposition like the Stuart Restoration. Meanwhile, in Spain, where Dougal's been busy, Dougal has been in Spain and has relayed information via communiques for Jamie, which are then supposed to go to Charles. Mm-hmm. Philip, the
Those
king...
Are like coded letters that
exactly.
they get back and forth. Yeah.
Now, Philip, the king of Spain, declined to lend any assistance to the Stuarts. The Pope wants to avoid friction between France and Spain. And Jamie's main concern regarding Charles and his finances, the investment that he made with the Comte Saint-Germain. Because that is the one thing that he says, this could actually reward them.
Yeah.
They could actually make bank. And so the bankers...
He doesn't really know yet what it is.
Exactly. He doesn't know the details of it. Yeah. So the bankers may change their tune, he says, should Charles come into some money. Saint-Germain and Charles stand to triple their money, we learn. Mm. That's a pretty darn good prospect there, as far as money goes. We are reminded that Claire is keeping silent about Dougal's visit in return for his help getting Randall arrested. So Jamie's talking about, here's an update of what Dougal's doing in Spain, but Claire is like, she can't can't share that she actually ran into him and that she worked with him, kind of. Then Jamie and Claire have a conversation about how each has saved the other's life. And this is a very important conversation.
Yeah, this is. This conversation
is a lot of...
I'm looking forward to this conversation.
And this is so key. I think it's one of those, like, you know, we'll discuss a scene. Like, the wee Fergus, or this. Oh, it's so cute. Wouldn't it be great if we saw it in the show? Okay, there are so many things that are sweet and cute and nice, and that's funny, and that's from the books, and we love it. This is something that is so related to the story, because it is heavy. I don't even know if I would say this conversation is foreshadowing, because it's not a hint of anything. It is full on giving
Well, it's I like
a possible ending of something.
Well, it also I think shows you a little more about how analytical Jamie is.
Absolutely.
How he really sits there and thinks about everything. He has this uncanny ability to just start a conversation out of nowhere but you see Claire picks up and knows right away what he's talking
about.
But
can we absolutely not discuss the fact that how much of a woman he became in the scene?
Because
he was totally keeping score. That is a woman thing to do. Like, I don't know.
No, he started, I think, keeping score. Or he started saying, we've done this. And then he comes out and he's like,
trying to reason with her and find a way to explain to her why he did what he did.
Yeah.
Because he goes back and forth saying, like,
he may be.
Well, there
that is a
this.
Woman thing to keep a tally of who did more of one thing than another. That is a woman thing.
But
don't even care about that.
He only started with that. And then he goes into, look, it's not a matter of, the reason I did this, which I'll get to, he says, is not a matter of obligation. It's a matter of, I don't feel I'm doing this because I feel I owe it to you. I'm doing this because I want to save you.
Yeah.
Don't be serious. I'm being snarky and you need to acknowledge that fact.
No, but in his whole thing is, he says it's bad enough, not bad enough that you chose me, but he's like, it's bad enough for Frank. He got the shaft. You chose me. I'm not going to feel bad about it. But you didn't realize all the implications that could have held. And how could I force you into having basically taken his life by choosing me? And that's not fair to do to you.
Well, but Jamie's not thinking even far enough into it.
No, he's not.
Because if Frank never existed, she would probably never have been in Scotland
during
that time
Jamie.
Period to touch the stones.
And
he hasn't
made that connection yet.
No.
Like, he hasn't, and I don't know if he ever really realizes that. Like, so if he were to kill Frank, or no.
Yes.
If he were to Randall, kill Randall.
So if he were to kill Randall, there would be no Frank. If there were no Frank, there would be no Claire in Scotland. She would not have gone up to the stones. She would not have been there for their second honeymoon because he didn't exist. So there would be no Claire for him. And he has not made that
he
connection.
He hasn't. The
yet.
Only connection he's made is, I want someone alive for you in case something happens and you need to go back.
And that, to me,
is the closest he's come.
Is the closest he's come.
So that's what I was about to say, is that we get to the real reason why Jamie spared Randall's life, or at least for a year, he says.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't to save Frank's life. Just for the sake of saving it. Jamie says, because of Charles Stewart, so far we have stopped all the Earths, but with this investment of his, well, he might yet succeed in leading an army in Scotland, and if so, well, you can better than I do what may come. And Connie shares, Jamie has thought it over and decided that the real reason to not kill Blackjack is to leave an, quote, I like what you say, Connie, quote, get out of the 18th century free option for Claire, in case something happens to Jamie and she needs somewhere or someone to go back to. Before the promise, though, before she gets to the promise, there's a hedgehog reference. I laid my hand on his head. The short hair felt bristly but soft, like a very young hedgehog. Yes, Connie says, this read-along is for the book, not the TV show, but I don't think Sam's actually going to have short hair in France. I don't know.
Was wondering that myself, but I thought, I wonder if they'll, I'm just curious as to how they'll arrange the whole thing with
the duel?
With the duel, seeing if
and
they'll have that,
yeah.
Seeing if they'll even bother having that, or if they'll skip that, and just have him come in later.
It's easy enough to not even bring that into the story.
Yeah.
If they introduce it, then you kind of need to keep it consistent.
I have
but
a feeling that they're not going
to.
Because
you don't
do
really
it.
Have to.
I think
and
they're going to rearrange
You don't have
things.
To, but it was such a nice moment in the books where he talks about the first duel he had where his hair blew in his eyes.
I know.
And that's the reason when
he chops it.
That he all of it off again. So.
So, as you guys have already said, he wants her to have a place to go to in case stuff comes to pass.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Claire, you know what it cost me to do this for you, to spare Randall's life. Promise me that if the time should come, you'll go back to Frank. For that is why I spared Jack Randall for a year. For your sake. Promise me, Claire. All right, she says. I promise. So, what about this poignant, pivotal scene? She is not so much, I've already said this, foreshadowing as foretelling a possible end. Because there are possible ends. One possible ending is Culloden does happen. One possible ending is Culloden doesn't happen. We haven't gotten to the end of the book yet. We're not going to spoil that. But this is something that he's saying, you know, in as much as they can plan.
He wants her to have a backup plan, basically. He wants her to have a backup plan and someplace safe to go. Because he knows if Culloden does happen,
there's going to be nothing for her there,
and she's going to need to go.
Yeah.
So.
And thank goodness that even exists as an option.
Yeah.
So now
that doesn't exist as an option for us. Like, if you get a parking ticket, too bad.
You can't go through any stones. Can't go through any stones.
Man. Pay your parking ticket.
Yeah.
So now, this is what we've all been waiting for. Da-dun, da-dun. Horsey time.
You are gross.
I had horsey time earlier.
Where did this kind of horse come from? I'm talking about horses. I don't know what you're talking about.
What do the horses do, Ginger?
I just mean horse. Later we'll talk about it. I'm just talking about the horses.
What do the horses do, Ginger?
They've arrived at the stables at Argenton. Jamie is talking. Hey, this reminded me of you. Okay, what am I alluding to here, Lene? Jamie is talking pretty to a mare. What am I alluding to?
I'm feeling a little bit of Oklahoma right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Purdy.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Jamie's talking Purdy and to a mare, and one of the wives of one of the ladies there remarks, "I wish my husband would talk that way to me." Like, there are so many things that some of the funniest stuff in this chapter is the comments the women make.
Yeah.
About my husband does this, my husband doesn't do this. I wish my husband could. It's like, oh my goodness.
Size of their husbands.
Oh yeah, my goodness.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, but from the descriptions of their husbands, they don't sound very impressive.
Well, because most of them married for money or stature and not for love.
Or for want of doing it, because the one dude was like, "What? Get off of me!
Don't you know
you're married
That's what I mean, though. Like, he probably only got married because
of her money or something.
Yeah, for her money or, yeah, you know, whatever.
Sounds like he's into dudes.
Yeah.
We know one person who's into dudes.
Yeah.
Well, but
we do.
I don't even know which dude she was speaking of, but he clearly was not into...
Can I just say how weird this must be for Claire to be hanging out with the Comte Saint Germain?
Kinda.
Well, she's not hanging out with him, per
but
se.
But he's in the group.
He's hanging out with his wife more.
That's a little weird.
More concerned about finding out more about his wife.
But he's like... in the group when they're talking about the mayor, and Jamie's talking pretty to the mayor. And
Purdy.
Because he makes a comment and kind of looks over at Claire.
Does he wink at her?
He doesn't wink at her.
We'll get to winks later.
Yeah, we will.
So as you said, Saint-Germain is there, and Claire tries to get a look at his hands near the thumb for a mark that might point him out as one of her attackers from the alley, but the lace on his wrist fell past his knuckles, so
Missed opportunity.
Missed this one.
And I have to say, I love the whole scene when, I think it's after they've looked at the mare that's in the stables, and they're kind of going off to their, getting ready to separate into the men versus women or whatever. I don't know if it's before or after the breeding. I think it's before. But Jamie's like, he breathes in the stables and he's like, oh, I missed this, you know, the smell. And it's like, I don't know, for me and anybody who rides horses that likes horses, it really has, like, a certain smell when you go to the barn, and it's like, oh, it just, like, hay and horses and shavings.
We
it
just
smells
got,
so good. I love it.
We just got guinea pigs.
And my husband goes to the barn, he's like, it stinks. And I'm like, oh, I think it smells good.
We just got guinea pigs, and part of their, like, diet is Timothy hay, which smells just like alfalfa to me. So when I go into her room now, my daughter's room now, it smells like
It smells like a barn.
Smells delicious.
As Diana describes the cleanliness of the stables, she says it surpassed even that of L'Hôpital des Anges. Oh my goodness, Lene, the cleanliness of stables obviously depends...
I've never known a clean stables.
I have a question.
Is a subjective term when it comes to stables.
So I know it depends, obviously, where one is, the type of stable, the purpose, etc. What is clean or not, or however you want to describe it? What's the range you've been in?
I've been in some barns that are fairly clean, and they rake up all the hay, you know, that comes out of the aisleways or whatever. They keep the aisleways clean and stuff. But there was one place that I rode out in Woodland where the aisleways were stone. It was a huge, huge indoor arena. It was a dust-free arena. So the sand was like rolled in like a wax and little chunks of rubber. So the arena didn't make any dust. And the guys would go around and feed all the horses around the arena because all the stalls were on both sides of the barn. And after they were done at the day, at the end of the day, they had a huge, huge industrial vacuum, and they would literally vacuum the aisleways.
Oh, how funny. That's crazy.
Because I guess, because it was such a big barn, it was easier than sweeping. They couldn't just sweep all that, right? Or rake it, because it was stone. It was like pavers. And I was just like, oh my gosh, they actually vacuum this barn. That was the cleanest barn I've been to. But even there, everything has kind of a fine layer of dust on it.
Well, you're outside.
Because shavings create dust.
But you're also outside. Being outside in general has a fine layer of dust on it, regardless of what you do.
Yeah, there is.
So, I mean...
But I thought it was interesting also her description. She said the barns were stone, with stone floors and slate roofs. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this shows how much they value these horses.
Oh, heck,
because
yeah.
There's less chance of the building catching fire.
There you go.
And not only how clean they keep it. They really, really value these animals.
And they invite company over to watch their horses do it.
Well, some people get off on that.
They
kind of thing.
Purely care about.
I've seen
animals.
Horses do it.
We're gonna get to the doing it. Let's save it.
No, but I took like broodmare classes.
Save
and stuff.
It. I mean, is it special?
It's part of the conversation.
Do I need to light a candle?
Oh, and then what? You haven't. Go on. I'll let you go on.
Then out shoots Fergus, running away from two stable lads. He's thrown horse apples at. Hitting one of them in the face. Me too. I still have a question to ask you, but Connie commented on the exact same thing, so I figured I would ask her question first, or give her statement first. Connie shares, horse apples, in this case, appears to refer to horse dung.
Yes.
But horse apple can also refer to the fruit of Maclura pomifera, commonly called Osage orange, hedge apple, monkey ball, bois d'arc, bodarc, or bodoc.
Okay.
These horse apples are definitely, and poopies. They do.
These are of the poop variety.
And people call them apples. Pick out their stall. Get all the apples out of the stall.
Wow.
You know, that's what they call them. Because their intestines actually, inside as, okay, from one in, the one intestine to the, you know, large to the colon, right? It like actually has like a sphincter in it. And it kind of releases some, and then it squeezes it off. Squeeze it off. So we have these large, solid dookies, right? They don't.
They have balls.
Dogs are the same way. They have just one big, large poop.
Don't tell me about horses. My poop. You don't know how I poop.
I know all about
it. I may have apples.
I know all about animal poop. I'm a pet sitter.
So. I have people apples.
Yeah, you don't want to have people apples. There's something wrong if you have apples. But horses, they actually, that's why even though when they defecate, it's in this big patty, they're all these little round apples.
Yes.
Right?
It's a pile of balls-ish.
And it's like with goats, too. Goats and deer,
and
they have little pellets.
Little pellets.
Bunnies.
And goats.
It's similar.
Oh my God.
It's because of the way their digestive tract works, is all.
Little tiny, we call them beans.
Yeah, they're like little beans.
Little jelly beans.
Yeah.
Don't eat them.
You don't eat them.
Don't eat
those apples. Don't eat
those
jelly beans.
So Jamie's line, when Fergus comes shooting out and the guys come after him, and have one of them has the poop on his face, she's like, he'll be all right. All lads get into manure fights. Oh, yeah. As you do.
Okay, you know, and I've known kids because I was at a barn that had quite a few young kids in it. And we had this huge manure pile next to the barn. And there were some kids, they would go run in the manure pile, play in it, roll down the manure pile. And I'm just like...
Were they boys or both?
No, there were girls and boys.
Go girls.
It doesn't smell like poop.
No, it doesn't. If you have to be around poop, you want to be around horse poop.
And it
smells good.
And the manure pile isn't just poop. It's also like, you know, shavings and hay and stuff mixed in with it. But it's a lot of poop.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Okay. That doesn't appeal to me. But.
This is moderately off. No, it's completely off topic. I was reading this thing online today. It was one of those, like, it was either BuzzFeed or one of those things where it's like 15 things. And this one was like 15 or what, I don't remember the number, but things you may not have realized happened during the Harry Potter series. And one of the things was about Fred and George. And it said, Fred and George once got in trouble for throwing snowballs at Voldemort's face. But in the context
of it
was the back of Professor Quirrell's turban, and they were like, I mean, you think about it, you're like, oh my God, they totally threw snowballs in Voldemort's face. I didn't realize that until I read that today. I was like, oh my gosh. Anyway,
yeah, awesome.
Horse apples made me think of it.
So the party there was also to observe the mating there at the stud.
Lene, does Diana's description in general jive with descriptions of places you've been as far as, like, a stable? I mean, yeah. The look.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, and there, stone is a much more expensive thing to build out of. I mean, nowadays people don't, I mean, they do expensive barns you go to and they look really nice. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, these beautiful, huge stone barns, but nowadays it's not, it's like metal and because it's easier, it doesn't degrade over time as much. Stone doesn't, but stone's so expensive, so they're usually either wood or metal. But
so then we get to the pièce de résistance. No, not really, the process of mating.
Mm-hmm.
So you've talked in other times when you visited us and talked about horses, you've mentioned that you've taken animal husbandry classes. You've mm-hmm. taken the anatomy classes. You've worked with horses since you were young.
Yeah.
Or not that you're old. You're yeah. not old now, but my point is...
So old.
I'm so old.
Such old hackies. So old. No, we are. So you've worked with horses the majority of your life.
Yeah.
I don't know that. How do you fall into that one? Mm. So you have a lot... out of the three of us, you've got the most experience easily. So my question is, did you ever work in a functioning breeding stable, a stable that was there
I never worked. I took broodmare classes, in which case we had to go
tell
out.
Tell us about this.
We had to go out to the barn, and they actually, and I, you can take it, I took it twice for credit.
Because she couldn't
you
get
it
enough.
Wrong the first time?
No, but you can take, no.
She's like, no,
but,
no,
but you
that.
Can, in order to get enough credits for the equine study certificate, you had to have so many credits, and and you could take the broodmare classes twice and get credit for them, and also the hoof care classes, which is working with a farrier. And the broodmare classes, the first time I went, we did, it was interesting. They actually flushed out a mare because she was kind of having trouble getting pregnant, and so they actually flushed her out with saline. They reached inside with a, anyway.
You have to finish that saline.
It was just like this long tube, and you actually had to put your hand inside and guide it into the uterus and then pump her full of saline, and then it would slowly drain out. And then hopefully, you know, hopefully there wasn't an infection. They may have even given her some antibiotics to mm-hmm. make sure there was no infection that was keeping her from getting pregnant. And they did actually do a live cover breeding there with a mare. Because they had a stud that was there that they really, he was like, I guess this really easygoing stud and really safe to use. Some are not.
Some can be painful.
Some are very,
I mean, violent.
Yeah, violent. And
tell
it
me,
has to
tell
do.
Tell me about how you know about this, Ginger. How painful are these horses?
Anyway, we'll ignore Summer.
Never.
But some of them, yeah, they're more dangerous and you don't want to do live cover. And a lot of...
what is live cover?
Live cover is when you actually have the male, the female waiting, and you actually bring the male and he mounts her and literally penetrates her.
Oh,
that's live cover.
Instead of the insemination.
Yeah, most people don't actually do... Well, not most people. I should say certain breeds require live cover.
Okay.
Some don't... Some will let you do artificial insemination, and then some will actually let you do embryonic transfers.
Wow.
So that you can continue showing a mare while she's actually, her baby is being in another mare.
So literally,
born.
Whether it's inseminated or a live cover,
mm-hmm.
a mare can get pregnant,
mm-hmm.
however it's done.
Yeah.
And then you can transfer her embryo from her uterus.
Yeah, usually,
into another
I'm
one.
Sure, I'm sure it's not it? Even, I'm sure they harvest her eggs.
Oh, okay,
and
that's
do
what
it.
I was about to say.
Okay. I'm sure they would harvest her eggs.
That makes more sense.
Like they would a human that's donating mm-hmm. eggs mm-hmm. for anything like that. And then they implant them in the other mare. But you can do live cover, or you can use a teaser mare to get. I know they use teaser studs and teaser mares.
Oh,
In the one barn I went to, it was a halter horse barn, I believe. They had this teaser stud, and I don't even know. I think he was a stud, but they weren't using him to breed that day. So they were just checking to see if the mares were in heat or not. So they would walk him up to the stall, open the door, and see how they would respond. And you could
see
tell.
If she winked.
Yeah, seriously. And you could tell right away.
I learned, Lene.
I know.
I remember you're teaching us.
Yeah, but you could tell right away if they were not responsive. I mean, the mare would pin her ears and strike and get away from me.
Wow.
And then they'd go up to another mare, and she'd, turn her butt to him and squat on the ground and like lift her tail like, I'm ready. Like, and wink at him. And like, they actually squirt, like there's a fluid that squirts out that has a bunch of hormones and pheromones in it. Anyway.
Now, there was a word Diana used. I did not make note of this, but I heard it a few times when I was listening to it, and then I saw it again when I was reading it. Mm-hmm. Curvetted. Curvet. Is it a... When the stallion was mounting the mare, mm-hmm. she did something with her neck that Diana called the mare curvetted. Do you know what that is?
I haven't heard that term. I know... I mean, if you do live cover, it can be a lot like they describe in the book.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that's pretty spot on. And exactly how Jamie said, like, they were all betting on which mare mm-hmm. is the one they're going to pick. And the one that he picked was the right one because why? Because she screamed, she called back to him, right?
Yes.
So, and they do. They call back and forth to each other and they, yeah. You know when they're in season and when they're not. It's pretty obvious. Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty obvious. The mares let you know if they're not. But nowadays they don't do a lot of live cover because it's really dangerous.
Yeah.
And the male can get kicked. They have actual breeding harnesses that they will put on a mare so that it like holds her legs, her back legs, so that she can't kick while he's mounting.
Hmm.
And those have been around for probably centuries.
Yeah.
But so if you have a mare that you know is gonna might kick, even though she's in season, she mm-hmm. might get testy and kick out at your stud. You don't want him to get a broken leg and lose your best
so
horse.
So it's dangerous even for humans to be around that.
Oh, yeah.
Too close to it.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, and if the stallion is trained well and shown how to do his job the mm-hmm. right way, they're not super dangerous. You do have to stay out of their way.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you have a phantom mare, which... kind of funny. It's basically like a big cylinder, padded cylinder on a pole, and mm-hmm. some stallions, you can train them to mount this mare and you can collect their semen off of it.
Oh, wow.
Because they mount this fake thing and then there's this artificial vagina. You just slip on them and then they ejaculate.
That's handy.
Yeah. And they even like prefer, there's different kinds of artificial vaginas.
It's like an
and they
equine
prefer one over the
fleshlight.
Other.
Oh,
what?
An equine fleshlight.
It's this big long
fake vagina.
Do they put
pheromone on the
No. They don't need to because once the stud knows like and learns his job and knows like oh I get to get off when I see this thing, they're gonna
he'll do it. Okay.
Yeah.
So speaking of all of that and getting off and everything, Lene, have you heard anyone in any capacity describe watching the process of a live cover as arousing to any degree?
I've never found it arousing. I found it fascinating and clinical, but I've never found it arousing.
Well, I'm sorry. Would it be arousing when you see a mare being tied down so that a stallion can cover
her? Well,
maybe
her? Not.
Some people
maybe
might.
Not what
some
she's
people might.
But
seen.
I know. I'm just
I'm
saying that doesn't...
Book.
I mean, if it was like a in nature thing where it wasn't like something that was being manufactured and artificially created by man, I'm not saying I would be aroused watching it. I'm just saying that in the...
What are you trying to say?
So I was like, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Then in the context of what you would see it today, and where everything is so structured and it's not natural anymore, I would
At
not
2 o'clock,
think...
you're going to bring Stallion B over to the...
Yeah.
Not even that. Like, bring the mare over. We're going to tie her down because we don't want her to hurt, you know, Stallion B.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It takes a lot of...
The romance out of it?
Yes, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It is very, I don't know.
But
it's clinical.
It's like the difference between watching like porn and watching somebody get artificially inseminated at the doctor. It's not sexy.
I don't want to think any is sexy, but...
I don't know. Some people get off on like...
Somebody get artificially inseminated?
No, but male horses have very large penises. That's a reason you say hung like a horse. That's
no,
a reason
not,
that's
okay.
a...
I'm not disagreeing with
that's
that
a term.
Statement. I'm just saying that I'm equating...
And the ladies in the group got all Twitter painted like, oh, did you see that horse?
That's
you know,
why
blah,
I'm
blah,
asking.
Blah.
This was in there.
And there, I mean, it's fun to joke about that kind of stuff. I would never actually find it arousing.
Well,
I mean,
maybe.
I see the gelding I ride. He gets erections all the time. And he... because. They do.
It's all about you.
Because, no, like...
You should stop wearing those pants.
Shut up. Stop.
No, it's not the pants. It's the boots.
Stop the boots. The boots.
It's
the,
no,
the
spurs.
It's the crop.
It's her helmet.
Stop. No, it's not my helmet.
Definitely it's the crop and the spurs.
Helmet's not sexy. No, but men, the geldings can get erections even though they're gelded. Yeah. Even though they're not, you know, stallions anymore, they still can, and it still feels good, I'm sure.
So likely, regardless of what we may find or not find arousing about such an experience or such a sight.
Evidently, they did.
Well, and you had to look at the society. They were pretty repressed,
pretty
right?
Repressed and buttoned.
Well, apparently,
the French not
they're
as much.
Not that repressed.
The French not as much.
Literally half of them had husbands that were disinterested in doing it.
Well, because they were all probably having sex with mistresses.
And men.
Or that. Yeah. So at the end of the scene, when the Duke says to Jamie, "You are accustomed to such sights, my Lord Brochturoch. Tell me, how does the sight make you feel after so many times?" Jamie answers, "Very modest, Your Grace."
Yeah, and you should.
Now, where are they now?
At the stud.
Where is that located?
In that city that starts with A.
What is it?
I'm not saying it again. It may come up again. So
right,
now...
All right. Curvet is, it says, of a horse. The curvet of a horse. A graceful or energetic leap.
So the discussion of the ladies at the picnic is a direct result of how aroused they were from observing the mating, or at least what I think
it just got them thinking about their husbands.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And making comparisons is funny and fun, and so they were all being, you know.
Now,
silly.
Connie points out the Comtesse Saint-Germain is present. She is young, and the body conversation of the other ladies is making her blush. So,
and she doesn't talk much either.
Not at all.
So it's kind of like, I wonder what the arrangement was there.
I know.
And it says, states specifically, that he hardly ever brings her out in public with him, mm-hmm. except in situations like this where a mistress isn't allowed.
Huh. Yeah. That's true.
Can you imagine, though, in a society like that?
Everybody already knows.
Where, seriously, you're married to a guy... for money or to have more influence or for your family to make a good connection or whatever. And then he goes out and takes his mistress out all the time.
I know, but you have to also
understand. I'd be embarrassed to go out in public because people know.
But here's the thing, though. In that society, people pride themselves in having young and innocent wives who don't know anything of the darker side of society. So for them to take their wives to these places that they frequent, and these people aren't going to nice places. They can't take their wives to those nice places. They're not, or the places they're going. The places they're going are not nice places, is what I'm getting at. So they're not going to take their wives to the brothels and the places where the men are playing chess.
Yeah, those aren't
and
nice
all the
places.
Other places. They're not taking their wives there because they want their wives to be virginal and innocent and naive. And if they expose them to that seedier side of reality and where they are, they're not going to have that, like, I'm on a pedestal, like, innocent, naive wife anymore. They try to...
To me, it's about control, and it has nothing to do with that. I think, yes, there was a societal thing that made men feel like, yes, they keep their wife separate and this little thing, little pretty thing, but it's also about control. Men own their wives, basically.
The Duke of Sandringham kind of sneaks up on the party and sits next to Claire, who noticed his eyes straying now and again to the men near the paddock. They begin a conversation about Jamie's horsemanship. Then the Duke switches to English. I'm like, oh, that's right. They're speaking French.
Yeah.
I forgot. I'm like, oh, of course they are. The Duke switches to English and inquires whether or not the price on Jamie's head still stands. Then the Duke reaches for a small sausage and continues the conversation. He says that he has made inquiries and believes that the price may be lifted from Jamie's head with a little effort. Claire asks why he'd be interested in helping. He lays it out. Quote, as a matter of supposition, of course, he says, his friendship with a certain personage from Rome is a little worrisome, or potentially worrisome, given Jamie's connection to two powerful Highland families. When it was Claire's time to talk, she also puts a small sausage in her mouth. And
I mean,
basically,
it
was
about
a bribe. Yeah,
tiny penises.
Sausages. That's yeah. True. It was a bribe. So he's saying if...
He just wants his business back. He wants his city back. He doesn't want to keep fighting. He doesn't want to have to keep dealing with... Because they're the biggest rivals to him right now in his business. And he's like, let me do what I can to get you out of my city so I can have everything back the way that it was before mm-hmm. you and your meddlesome husband showed up in my city.
And, I mean, and she says it was a bribe and it was a nice one. I mean, it was like, how much... What else do we want besides
but
going back
wait,
to Lalibut?
His thing was like just his requirement was to like basically break off his friendship, sever
with
ties
Stuart,
with him,
yes.
and go back to Lallybroch. Which I get it, but couldn't he have just bribed him to play spy instead? and said, thwart any stuff that you see that could come my way? I mean, couldn't he have just as easily done that? Or couldn't they have countered with that or something, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I was like. Wouldn't it have been more actually, I don't know, helpful? Because, I mean, it'd be one thing to cut your ties with him. Who's to say, like, he doesn't go off with Saint Germain and, like, do other things and get money on his own? That doesn't... That
you
doesn't,
mean Jamie?
Yeah. Yeah. No, no. Stuart.
Oh, I see.
If he, you know, he could still... raise money on his own some which other is, way without Jamie.
Why, yes, to me.
But it's not just money. It's money and connections.
This has nothing to do. Yeah. This has nothing to do with the Stuart uprising. This has everything to do with
except that his
Saint Germain wanting him gone.
Except for his connections, not only the money or the possible money. Because you're right. They don't. He doesn't have a lot of money to help the Stuart with Charles. But the money connection, at least at this point in the story, is looking like his connection with the Comte, right? That's the money connection that's looking, yeah. That's going to pan out, if anything does. But he said flat out, it's because of his connection with two powerful Highland clans.
Yeah.
That if there is something, that could lead to, that could be. And he said future could be worrisome. So Claire's like, yeah, it's a bribe. And he asks him, why don't you speak with Jamie about this? And the Duke replies, because men are, quote, more amenable to words spoken from the home quarter. Or, in other words, a woman's touch. Then a horse rips toward them, a young colt, and he wasn't broken yet, so he hadn't, well, he wasn't used to things on his back, and he was wild and, you know, really freaking out. And there was a young Fergus straddling his neck, holding onto his mane.
The description, though, cracked me up, because it was like, you could tell it was a young colt that hadn't been broken, like you said, but he wasn't so much disturbed by what was on his back, he was like, what's going on? Like, because Fergus is so tiny, it was like a flea, you know, like a tick on a dog's back.
Just
like,
get off, you little pest.
What is this? Kind of twitching. But it isn't until the other kid.
I don't know how many times I've read this, and I never got this mental picture after I had to read it like 3 times. Quote, as for Fergus, his legs were stretched out nearly at right angles.
Yeah. Like doing the splits. Yeah.
And across the Percheron's back. The only hold he had on the horse was the death grip he had on the mane. So it was the manure boys were having their revenge. Their intention, if I read correctly, was to kind of disturb the horse, you know, get him going, block the alleyway, and open the gate to the paddock. So basically give the horse a little run to scare Fergus. And then he would be knocked off or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't seem that they really wanted to do a ton of damage. They just wanted to scare the poop out of him.
Yeah.
But what really makes things go to pot is when this young boy who's up in this loft drops the hay flake
on the rump of the horse,
and it goes.
That's when it's like, what the?
And so the horse goes kerplooey, and as the horse with Fergus passed beneath the tree, they take off. They go beneath this tree. I don't know how much warning Jamie had. I don't know how much foresight he had, how far away this tree was. But Jamie ends up being in the tree, and he. Is not K-I-S-S-I-N-G. he jumps down and basically takes out Fergus off the horse and lands, gets his wind knocked out of him, and Fergus is like, oh, let's do it again, me lord, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
So you two have shared Summer's horse adventures, right? Where Summer almost lost her a few things.
Vagina.
And no, do you have any other adventures that you've been a part of, or that you've been witnessed?
I mean, you've broken several things.
I've been. I couldn't tell you how many times I've come off horses. I've come off so many times. I've been reared off. I've been bucked off. I've been jumped off where the horse launched so hard over a jump that I literally cartwheeled in the air before I hit the ground.
Good lord!
And my trainer looked at me and thought, like, she's like, seriously, I thought you were dead. Like, I thought I'm gonna have to like. Call her family, like, and I bounced back up and I got back on the horse and I didn't get hurt, but
it's because you were drinking, right?
No,
usually
no,
that's
I just,
what helps you survive accidents.
It was a lucky fall the way I fell, and then the bad accidents I've had were like
stupid little things
that didn't really like that should not have like I should not have torn my ACL when I fell. Oh. You know, it was not a hard fall, but
did
it
that
was just
hurt
the
more
way.
Than you? I know it was different.
It
but
hurt
that
more
hurt
than
more
else.
Than you broke your foot?
Oh yeah,
oh.
ACL was awful. It was awful. I heard the pop, pop, pop in my knee,
oh,
and
gosh.
I went into shock.
It that's was, what you had surgery bad. For.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But no, I've had horses run away with me before. When I
because you're so romantic.
No.
Run away with me, Lene.
No, no, my friend that I grew up with, and she, I didn't start writing until I was like 19.
Oh.
And because my parents were too poor, so they couldn't afford it. But my best friend growing up, all through grade school, she took writing lessons. So every once in a while, we got at the barn, to her barn with her, and we'd sneak out, like, the lesson horses out back when nobody was there. And there was, like, this little grove of trees with a trail that went through it, and we'd ride them through their bareback. And then on the way back, we'd, like, run them back. Well, horses know the way home, and they know they're almost home. And she's like, just make sure you stop him before you get to the railroad tracks. Because, like, you have to go under this railroad trestle. And then, like, there's the barns and the paddock. So once you get past the railroad trestle, there are all these pastures and then the trees and stuff. And we started running him back through the grove. And that horse would not stop. And I was doing everything I could to get it to stop. And, like, branches were flying in my face. By the time I did get it, I got it stopped before we got back to the barn. So we didn't get in trouble. But as soon as I got it stopped, I jumped off that horse and I started smacking the crap out of it. I was so mad. Little stinker. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the before I really knew what I was doing, stupid stuff that happened. I've been kicked by a horse. I got mule kicked by a pony right in the thighs. It gave me big horseshoe. Luckily, it didn't have shoes on. It was barefoot.
Oh, gosh.
Or else it could have broken both my legs.
Oh, gosh.
But a mule kicked me. It got me. It was like horseshoe prints of bruises.
Well, at least he had the courtesy to be
shoeless.
Even.
Yeah. Yeah. Even.
No, to be even.
Oh, it launched me like several yards away and I hit the ground and it was not fun. And that was a little.
Oh my gosh.
POS, that thing. But yeah, I mean, it's the thing when you work around large animals, there's high chances of getting hurt. I don't know what to tell you.
I have fallen in love with that Nat Geo show.
Which one?
Was it The Amazing or something? Dr. Pole?
The Incredible Dr. Pole.
Incredible. Oh,
he's
my gosh.
Awesome.
He's 70-something.
He's like 72.
He rocks my world. He makes me...
He's amazing.
If I had the money or, you know, could take on that type of student loan debt, I've never in my life considered large animal medicine ever. He makes me interested.
It's a lot of work, though. It's such hard work.
It is.
But he's one of those, like, you have to have endless amounts of energy, and he does.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still going at 70-something years old.
Absolutely. But I notice even in their clinic, when it's small animals, like the horse, the cat, dog, whatever it is, and they're doing, say, a spay or maybe with certain surgeries they would do it, but even with the surgeries that are like a spay, definitely things that when I've volunteered in vet offices, they intubate always, they give, you know, the sedative, which he gave, they intubate, they monitor. I'm not saying that they don't monitor on that show or in his office, but I don't think I've seen any animals intubated. And so it just seems to me, maybe the type of surgery is what it is.
I'm sure.
But it just seems like even in the clinic, it's like a farm doctor mentality of, look, we're going to do the least amount. Not that we don't care for the animals. We do. But you do what you got to do to make it work. But you don't go to all these fancy schmance things that are not necessarily.
And the more drugs you use, the more expensive it's going to be for the client.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you want to make the animal comfortable, but you don't want to go crazy. And yeah, no, I totally get it. I get it. But
so we'll rein that in. Okay, that was not a very good horse.
That was a horse?
I was like, I don't know.
That was like an elephant?
Oh,
maybe like a circus elephant.
It did sound like a circus elephant.
Okay.
Horses are like,
there we go. Lene helped us. Okay.
There you go.
The only one I know is the Wilbur one. Mr. Ed.
Yeah, that's not...
Wilbur.
Nope, stop.
You stop.
You need to edit that out.
No, it's funny.
You should seriously consider editing that out.
So back in Paris, Jamie had pulled a muscle in his thigh on that little...
On the stunt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Claire, healer that she was rubbing ointment on it. Ugh. It's a small glass jar that Monsieur Fauré had given her at l'hôpital.
He seemed like such
quote,
a nice man.
I know. Quote, a nice mellow scent... And was, this is the ointment.
Nice and greasy.
And was rich yellow-white of fresh cream. She tells Jamie of Sandringham's offer, which he says he doesn't think he has any choice but to say no to and to stay in France and see this whole thing through. Then he asks what the ointment is, and she tells him.
Where she got it.
Yeah. And we come to find out it's hanged man's grease. Literally, an ointment made from the fat rendered from hanged men.
Like Fight Club soap.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Only it's not
liposuction. I never saw Fight Club.
Well, in Fight Club, they make soap as a source of income, but they steal the liposuction fat from, like, a plastic surgeon
place. I have not seen that movie, and I
don't
render
that down and make soap out of it, whereas this is, like, the opposite.
Speaking of soap and fat rendering, I have only you've seen that movie, which is obviously fiction, right?
Yeah.
Not is that you it? Can't use that, but I don't know.
First rule of Fight Club, no one talks about Fight Club.
No, besides The Incredible Dr. Pohl, I also like, what's that show about?
Tiny House Nation?
No, that too. All the Tiny House shows. No, the one Alaska, the Final Frontier. Mm-hmm. And they do, you know, they butcher all of their, well, they raise, one of the families, parts of the family, raises herds of cows. And they, you know, they slaughter them and they butcher them. And they show you kind of in front. I mean, they show you pretty much everything. And they warn you up front. And there was one episode where they took, you know, they cut out the fat and everything. And they put it in these pots or pans or whatever. And they cook outside. They boil the fat to render. And in the end effect, it is this. They're making soap. And it's like, I don't know if I ever want to. I mean, you use what you have. And they're making use of every part of it. Every part. So That is good.
I have
that
respect
is good.
For that.
No, I have full that, respect. You know? I don't know if I want to... Because apparently... Isn't it tallow that you render? Is it tallow?
I think so.
It stinks. Summer and I... Remember that? It was 10, 15 something years ago. We were the four of us. Mom, Dad, Ginger, Summer. In a car on our way down to LA or something. And I swear this smell straight out of Hades hits the car. And I'm like, what the actual what is that smell? And we couldn't see any big trucks around us. We couldn't see anything, like, nothing. There's, like, no fire. There's nothing weird that's sticking out to you. Mm-hmm. And it was broad daylight. I'm like, this is the most fun. This is worse than a skunk. You want to be around a skunk. You don't want to be. But this was like, what the heck? Finally, either it pulls alongside us or we pull alongside it. And it probably makes more sense that we were going faster than this huge, like, semi. Mm-hmm. This semi had on it lettering somewhere on the back of the side that it was tallow. It was...
I'm sorry.
The most foul.
Is this one of the memories you had, like, from elementary school when you swore that somebody served you tongue in the cafeteria? You, I'm like, I promise you, they did not serve
that. That did not
happen.
I promise you, it did.
No.
But the hallucination. No. But the tallow truck, we really asked Mom
did
and Dad.
Did we? You also totally. Really remember this tongue thing happening?
Summer, yes, I do. But the tallow, the tongue, you may not have been there with me, but the tallow, you were in the car with me.
Ginger.
Summer.
I was, there was only 2 years I was not with you at that school, and I doubt that in
at
kindergarten and or first grade.
In elementary school?
Yes, there were only 2 years I wasn't with you at that
you're
school.
You're still on the tongue? I'm on the tallow, because that was like high school.
Yeah, you've been hallucinating for a while now.
At least I'm consistent.
This is true.
I like the whole scene of him not telling her exactly what it is at first. He's like, she's like, Jamie, what is it?
Oh,
Jamie,
I love how it keeps going.
Jamie,
on.
What is this?
What the,
like,
bloody effing hell is? Oh no, yes. What is it? And
she's
then
like,
she finds out what
me.
It is,
yeah.
And then all she hears, then she's like, "Okay,
what?
That's gross.
Where did
who
get
the F is Monsieur Fauré?" And he's like, "Oh, Sassenach, I thought you knew."
Yeah,
yeah, that was kind of gross. So we find out, of course, that he's the hanged. So we find out that Monsieur Fauré is the public hangman of the 5th arrondissement. Of Paris. So Connie shares a link that we'll put in our blog post that talks about executioners and their role as healers between the 15th and 19th centuries. So this is legit in history. Jamie goes, once he's, you know, gonna leave, and Claire's like, yuck. Jamie goes to wash off the grease and returns clean. Meanwhile, Claire has begun to bleed. And there's nothing to do, she says, likely nothing anyone else can do, so there's no reason to go even call for anyone. She thinks to herself, it isn't unusual for women to have slight bleeding during the first 3 months, but she's, as we said, five months along, which is a lot more serious. She
it's
says,
not good.
Yeah, she says, pray for us, Jamie, because at this point, this is pretty
that's
much
all you can do.
All you can do.
But I mean, that's standard, though. That's today, too. I mean, there's only so much they can do once the bleeding starts. All they can do is monitor you. They can't generally stop it. If it's happening, it's happening.
Yeah, it's... But nowadays, though, I mean, babies can be born at 5 and 6 months. That's not unheard of.
That's true.
And they... I mean, granted, they a lot of times have a lot of health problems, mm-hmm. but they can be saved. Whereas in that time, oh my gosh, there's nothing could have helped.
No.
Nothing could have
Yeah, but at 5 months, generally, if something... if there's a reason that they're being born that early, sometimes it's an underlying issue
with the baby.
With the baby, that there's something wrong with the baby. That it would not have survived.
Well, and they say miscarriages, especially miscarriages before, at 3 months and before, are almost always something to do with the fetus and and nothing to do with, you know, what the mother has done. It's just, you know, developmentally, it's not progressing the way it should and it self-aborts.
Yeah.
Either way, it's sad.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when, like, especially at 5 months when you're all super excited.
You think you're safe.
And
you're like, I've passed 3 months. I could tell people now.
Yeah. It's just, I can't imagine. I just can't imagine. That'd be awful.
Boo. But that is chapter...
To end that on a sad note.
No, to end that on a bleeding note. That is chapter 22.
In which book, Summer?
Diagon Alley.
Yes.
Dragonfly and Amber. Please join us next week when we are discussing chapter 23 entitled The Best Laid Plans of Mice and Men.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.